Hey, welcome to the Chess Experience. On this show, it's all about helping adult improvers. I want to make learning chess easier for you to navigate, and I also want you to have a more fun experience along the way. I'm your host, Daniel Lona, a fellow chess amateur. Let's get to it. This show is sponsored by Chess.com, the world's largest chess community. Chess.com recently launched a new way to learn from your games with a feature called Insights. If you visit chess.com/insights, you can get detailed stats and analysis in any of the time controls you've played and across any time period. What kind of things can you learn? Well, you can learn what time of day do you play your best, morning, afternoon, or night? What part of the game are you strongest or weakest, opening, middle game, or end game? Are you making more or less mistakes than opponents at your level? You can find out all this great info and much more at chess.com/insights. Welcome to this week's episode. Today we have an adult improver episode for you. I'm trying to keep this format a regular part of the show because many of you have told me how much you enjoy that type of guest. Before I dive into today's show, though, I want to give you one scheduling update. Next week, there will be no episode for a very brief break, but then the show will return the following week on Tuesday, March 26th. All right, back to this week's show. My guest today is Kinchu Toth. She hails from Hungary and is a lifelong student of the game. She's regularly going to OTB classical tournaments. Her FIDE rating is an impressive 1900. But even more of her life is chess than just that, because she moderates live events for chess.com, and she has also launched a Twitch chess channel as well. In this episode, we cover areas like how chess was a mandatory class for her in school in Hungary, what allowed her to jump 250 FIDE rating points in about a year, and her goals for earning the Women FIDE Master title, which will require her to earn another 200 points. Here's my interview with Kinchu. I hope you enjoy it. Hi, Kinchu. How are you?
Hey, Daniel. I'm doing great. Had a long day, but overall, what about you?
I'm doing well. Thanks for asking. I know we have a time difference here, so it's not real late for me, but it's much later for you. But I appreciate you doing the interview at a little bit of a later time for yourself. And I'm excited to talk about all things chess with you. So thank you for being on the show.
Well, it's my pleasure. And I would love to have this little conversation with you.
Yeah, absolutely. We're going to talk about several things in your chess life. Obviously, one will be your own chess journey, how you got into chess and how that evolved for you over the years. But before we dive into that, I was looking to just chat about something a little bit smaller to begin the conversation. And you mentioned to me before we started recording that you did some chess coaching today with a student of yours. And I didn't realize until we started recording today that you actually coach chess. And I love that. It's kind of a timely topic, at least on chess Twitter, because there's been a conversation going on about, you know, people at the amateur level, people who aren't titled players coaching chess students and sort of the value of that, or whether people even disagree perhaps with that kind of thing. But I am obviously in the camp of, I think that's awesome. when an amateur coaches someone else, I think that's, there's still a lot of value there that can be given. Can you just describe a little bit about how long you've been doing that and how many students you have, that kind of thing?
Yeah, definitely. I would love to share that because it's been a journey, I feel like. So everything started around a year and a half ago when I started university, when a FIDE master in Budapest reached out to me, and he asked if I was comfortable teaching groups of kids in Budapest, where I study, in the capital of Hungary. And I decided to try myself in it because I haven't really been a coach in my life before that. And I was just curious, you know, how difficult it is, because I was always on the receiving end of coaching. So at first I started in an American school which was already a big jump. So not even in Hungarian. I was teaching in English. And I went there every week, had around 14 kids. And I loved them. I really did. And I feel like they improved a lot, both in chess and both as a person. Because, and that's one funny thing about kids. I don't know about you, when you started off chess, but they were all so confident with themselves. And I feel like that's completely okay, you know? It's a completely different world, and you just suddenly feel like, oh, I'm so good at chess. And then you start seeing all these grandmasters and everything, and then you realize how small you are. I feel like that's what happened to them. So I remember the first few classes, they were like, oh, I'm like a chess champion. I can beat everyone in this room. And as we had more classes, they were starting to realize how difficult it is and how small they are right now in this whole field of people. So in the very end, some parents reached out to me and said that their kid grew a lot as a person, and I loved to see that. Since then, like a few months ago, a parent in my hometown reached out to me asking if I would like to teach her daughter. And so I took it. I took the opportunity, and this was the first time when I was actually teaching one-on-one sessions. And she's still my only student for now.
Well, yeah, so a couple of questions for you. First of all, that's all amazing that you're doing that. So the kids that you were teaching, were they all, they were starting at the beginner level, it sounds like?
Most of them. There were one or two who already had like even chess.com accounts and have already played on chess.com, but most of them were complete beginners, yes.
Yeah, that's really cool that you were helping a group of kids at that level. Yeah, and you asked, you know, how I was like, or if I remember how I felt in terms of confidence when I was a kid. Yeah, you know, it's funny when you mention that. I don't think I was like particularly confident, but I definitely overestimated how good I was.
Yeah, I think that's so common.
Yeah, yeah. It didn't help that God bless him, my dad taught me how to play, and I'm so appreciative for that. But he wasn't very good at all. Like, he just knew barely above the rules level. So I was able to beat him in not too much time, but that kind of gave me like a false sense of confidence in my ability.
That is such a big confidence boost to beat your father. I feel like,
right?
Like, that's the first step. Okay, when your parent is not like a professional chess player, of course.
Right. Yeah, but, exactly. Yeah, for sure. But that's great that you're teaching, or yeah, I guess you could say teaching or coaching still now. You have one student, you said. Is this something you think you just kind of always do a little bit on the side, always have like maybe a student or two? Is that just an interesting addition to your chess life?
I feel like if someone reaches out to me personally, I would feel so bad rejecting, because I know how difficult it is to find a good coach who's available, who's affordable, who's nice, and all this, because you need to fit the coach as well. So you can be like completely different styles. And so, of course, when a parent is reaching out to me, I have to at least try. And this wasn't really planned, my current student. It was kind of a random opportunity. But I would love to keep having at least one or two students. Just like, I wouldn't say on the side, because I do take it seriously. Yeah. So, you know, just like, it's also an experience for me. It makes me grow as well as a teacher, maybe, or as a chess player even.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, do you feel like any of your experience coaching other people in chess has helped your own abilities? Now, when I ask that, I understand that, like, probably, you know, if you're teaching absolute beginners, I can't imagine it does a whole lot to show them how the knight moves. But yeah. But yeah, I mean, you've taught a little bit beyond that, though, at least, right? Beyond someone just being at the absolute beginner level. So do you think that's helped your chess at all?
It did. Not like not like a huge amount, I would say. I feel like when you need to do reasoning to the kids, so you are very much trying to put reason behind why you need to take the center, why you need to castle relatively early, why you need to not make a lot of pawn moves early on. I feel like when you think this through for like the first time, that's kind of like, oh, I actually didn't know that from when I studied this. And these are like really, really small things. And for bigger players, it's an everyday thing. But when you start thinking about it, it actually, like, it's a really small portion of it, like, it's a really small amount of thing in your brain that just connects. So
yeah. Yeah, I love that. That's great. So yeah, now I want to kind of talk about your own chess journey and kind of at the beginning stages of it. First of all, before I ask, you know, like age that you were when you started and how that evolved, I'm just curious, like your household, did your parents play chess? What was it like growing up that way? I mean, was it already present for you growing up?
I do remember having chess boards at home, but I always just played maybe with my grandpa. My parents were never really into chess. They knew how the pieces moved, but never really played competitively or anything. So it was like they always helped me. If I wanted to play with them, they always played with me. But other than that, I didn't have a chess figure at home, if I could say that.
Yeah. So what ultimately led you to do more chess? I mean, you were playing with your grandpa some, but your parents weren't doing much of it. So what kind of lit the spark?
In elementary school, and that's actually really cool about my elementary school, we had chess classes, mandatory chess classes in the first two grades. And so that meant everyone in my class was playing chess, and our teacher was very much into making us go to kid tournaments. And even after that first 2 years, I decided to continue playing. And I always liked it. I just never knew there was such a big world behind it. I just, you know, went to these tournaments, maybe won a couple of medals. I'm not even sure. So, yeah, I mean, I don't really know if this is a thing abroad, like having chess classes, mandatory chess classes, at least in the school.
Yeah, well, I can't really speak to any other country other than my own in America. And that definitely isn't true here. We don't have anything mandatory, nothing at large anyway, for chess in schools. And we're lucky if there's even a chess club in the school. So like there wasn't even a chess club at my elementary school, for example. So I think, you know, the fact that it was mandatory, I love hearing that.
It is not a huge thing here, I think. My teacher was in, I think she was in Judith Polgár's program. So that's why she introduced us chess. But I do hear from other people in chess from Hungary that they did have these classes as well. So I really enjoy hearing how many schools joined this program, because I feel like Hungary is a huge chess country, and yeah. So making it even more popular is never bad.
Right, exactly. So that's pretty cool that even though it was mandatory initially for you, you took to the game, you really enjoyed it on your own, and then even once it wasn't mandatory anymore for you, you decided to continue it on your own as a kid. And so what did that look like for you over the years? You know, once you didn't have to do it and you were just choosing to do it on your own, were you studying regularly and going to tournaments?
Well, I do remember that we had Friday chess classes, and I'm not gonna lie to you, I found them kind of boring at first. I always enjoyed the break, and I even remember that we had a break from 3 p.m. to like 3:15 p.m., and that was like the peak of the chess class. We could go outside, run around and play soccer and stuff like that. But later on, I started enjoying them more. I still wanted to participate in these classes because it did help me, of course. And I did gain a lot of knowledge for tournaments. And I loved our coach as well. That's really important to put out there because I really hope he's going to listen to this. So a huge shout out to him.
So, yeah, you... You did chess on your own for some years as a kid, like I said, even beyond that mandatory period of classes. And ultimately you reached, correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe I have this right, you reached about 1600 FIDE as a kid. Is that right? Is that about how high you got before you took a break for a while?
Well, my first FIDE tournament was around the age 14. So yeah, I was still a kid and I did reach around 1600 by the time I was 18 or 17. It's a bit blurry there because there was COVID and everything. But yes, that is correct. I took a bigger break around 2021. It was a necessity as well because of like COVID. But I also didn't have a coach at the time and I just didn't feel like competing much.
I see. So until about the pandemic era, I guess, around mm-hmm. 2020, you were doing chess consistently. And then when that happened, you took a break for a while from chess, right? Was that, how long were you taking some time off of chess? Was that about a year or two?
It was around a year, I would say.
Okay, that's not too bad. It's nothing like a lot of the adults that I talk to.
To me, it's a huge break. You know, 1 year of my life is pretty big to me.
But yeah, sure. That's fair.
Yeah.
Yeah. I guess it's all perspective.
Exactly.
Yeah. I mean, if you love the game, 1 year off is a long time for sure. What made you decide to dive back into chess then?
I started streaming during my break from over the board chess. And the first time I played chess after this break, or like in the middle of this break, I would say, was because I was meeting some people from my community in Budapest at a tournament. And so that kind of made me feel like I want to get back, but I still didn't get back entirely and took an even longer break than before this small portion of break. It kind of put this thought in my head that I do want to get back to chess. I do want to play competitively again. It's just I didn't have a coach. I didn't feel like I was prepared enough to go there, you know?
So around what time would you say that you did dive back into it in a more consistent way, I guess you could say, in a more intense way, in a good way, good intense, in terms of being studying regularly and getting help and all that sort of thing?
So I got back to playing over the board classical tournaments late 2022, early 2023. So about a year and some months ago, I started working with a coach, and it was a big push for me. It was a big motivation for me because finally I felt like I had motivation, I had the resources to improve, because I always wanted to reach 2000, and that's still a smaller first goal, and then 2100 is like my main goal currently. So working with someone who realized that the openings, for example, that I was playing were not ideal for me, they didn't fit my play style, and the fact that we studied and found out what I enjoy playing actually made me feel like, yes, I can do this. I can actually improve and reach my goals. And I just started enjoying playing chess way more than before.
Okay, yeah, this is like kind of the fascinating part to me in terms of like how that that unfolded for you, because I think it's very relatable to a lot of my audience who are also adult improvers, you know, at the club level. You're probably in the higher end of that range of most of my listeners, but I still think, you know, almost all this stuff applies kind of regardless of your level, and that's what makes it so interesting. So you, just to kind of frame this, this is, I think, even a little, your improvement is even a little more impressive than I originally thought, because the time frame is even shorter. So you were about 1600 a year and some months ago when you said you got more committed again to chess. And in that time, you climbed up to a rating of about 1900 FIDE. So from 1600 to 1900 in just a little over a year. Is that right?
Yeah, that sounds about right. Like 1650-ish, but yes, exactly.
Okay, yeah, that's incredible. So, okay, 200 in the range of 250 to 300 points gain in just a little over a year is fantastic. I think a lot of people want to know how you did that. In that period, over the past, let's say, 15 months or so, what do you think has helped you the most improve in that time?
Having the good repertoire, I think... it's really like underrated. I know people love openings. Like, I know everyone is going insane over the openings. I was never really a person to be obsessed with openings, but I do have to admit that finding a repertoire that fits you is life-changing when it comes to chess. And of course, like, you have to do puzzles and play games. I feel like playing games and being comfortable with playing your openings is also important. But just finding the openings that fit your playstyle is actually life-changing, I feel like.
Okay, yeah, that's really interesting. We'll dive into that, because openings is a subject people love, and really relevant. Yeah. Okay, so what was the opening repertoire that you had to begin with before you made the changes to it, and why was it not working for you so well?
Well, okay, before I start speaking about this, I don't want to offend anyone. I know that there are people who love their openings. I'm just going to say that the openings I'm going to talk about, it's a disclaimer, they didn't fit my style, but it might fit yours. So,
sure.
I used to be an E4, E5 player. So every, like, from both sides, I always played E4. And for E4, I always played E5. And then I just played, like, kind of like with white, like four knights or like the Italian game. And so, okay, they were, I would say, beginner friendly, or like at my level, it was a friendly opening to me. It, you know, it was nice to play. It was like an open position. But I just felt like it didn't give me the type of positions where I can attack. And I love attacking. And with black, I just had, like, you know, E4, E5. And I just, again, went into the same openings that I played with white. So I kind of always had these positions where I just didn't know what to do. Now I'm in the stage of life where I love gambits. I know it's not ideal on, like, the highest level, but where I'm currently, I feel like gambits are enjoyable, and you can get really attacking positions. I don't know about you, like, what your play style is.
Oh, yeah, I can relate to this a lot, because I mean, maybe a little less so in terms of, like, which openings we're choosing, but just the general idea of wanting to play with a more attacking style, and then also gambits. So those are two things that definitely describe my approach to it, as well as help through my coach, who, you know, kind of encouraged that, and I really enjoy it now myself. So yeah, I can definitely relate to that. So okay, so what you were playing before, you know, kind of E4 as white, E5 as black, you found it wasn't serving your attacking preferences so much. So you switched to gambits. What gambits did you choose?
What I am defending until the end of my life is the Budapest gambit. People, when people hear it, they are so skeptical and are like, "Oh, why do you play the Budapest gambit?" Or they're just thinking that I'm memeing, you know, playing the Budapest in Budapest, which is okay. It's funny, you know, it's funny. I get it.
Right.
But I love the Budapest Gambit and no one can stop me from playing it.
Okay, so I'm less familiar with that. And maybe there's a chance that some listeners are too. What is that against?
So basically, like, is that you're playing the Budapest Gambit with the black pieces. When white plays d4, that's when you play knight f6. And when c4 happens, which is what I've found out that most people do enjoy playing d4 with c4, then you play e5. And when the opponent accepts that pawn that you just sacrificed on e5, that's when you go knight g4, wanting to get it back. And then the opponent tries to protect it with knight f3. Then you go knight c6. So what you go and do with black is that you develop your pieces quickly while white is trying to defend the pawn and tries keeping up the pawn. And usually you don't even get the pawn back ever, but you will have a really enjoyable position with active pieces, with active attack. And okay, I gotta say for everyone who's still skeptical about this opening, I just played this opening 3 times last week and my current win rate with it is 2.5 out of 3. And I even beat a FIDE master with it, so.
That's incredible. That's incredible. That is a good endorsement of that opening. So as white, what is the gambit line that you like to play?
I'm okay. So I'm still an e4 player, but when it comes to, for example, c5, I do a Mora gambit. And I enjoy it a lot. So the Mora gambit is e4, c5, and d4. So when the opponent takes, you don't even take it back with the queen, but you play c3. And then the pawn, if the pawn takes, you take it back with the knight. And then you're down a pawn, but then you have the open files, so the D and C file. And you just put your rooks there, and there are like a bunch of tactics in it. So
yeah.
I don't know if you're familiar with this gambit.
Yeah, I am, because I play the Sicilian, so I have to have some preparation when they play the Mora Gambit. Yeah, which my line that I study just pretty much dodges it and goes into kind of like the Alapin. But
okay.
So I take the fun out of it.
I see. Okay.
Yeah. Well, so that's really cool that you found openings that, you know, really serve your playing style that you were looking for. So I kind of want to ask a broader question about that. Did that experience kind of change your perspective at all on how important you think openings are?
Yes, I think.
Yeah, because usually, you know, like the general consensus is to downplay the importance of openings at the club level. The idea being that people spend too much time working on them. But it doesn't sound like you're talking so much about study time per se. It sounds like you're talking about like getting the right openings for what works for you.
Well, of course it is important that you study like the main lines. Of course you won't be able to study all the lines with a gambit because people can go so many different ways. So I feel like the learning process with gambits is playing a lot. But I do feel like a lot of people take opening study way too seriously. And I'm not saying that's a bad thing, because I love when someone knows every single line in the opening. That shows that they are genuinely passionate about the game. But I do feel like when someone is like on a beginner level, just started off, for example, openings are not as important as you might think. Because on that level, no one will put the opening for like 30 moves. They might make mistakes, and you might not know how to do it. I feel like it's more important to be familiar with the concepts in the opening and be prepared. And I feel like what a lot of people don't do is that they don't prep before their games. And to me, I feel like it's one of the most important things. Of course, online you don't prep, but when you go in a classical tournament, prepping is essential, and I think that's what changed when it comes to openings. I never really used to prep as deeply as I do now, so I'm just trying to find my opponents online and everywhere, and then just, you know, once I already know the principles in an opening, I just check out a few lines and I'm good to go.
Right. So yeah, let's talk about a little more of what you were doing in the past year or so, because you obviously made a lot of great progress. Were you attending OTB classical tournaments in this period? It sounds like you were. And I'm also curious, if so, how many you attended in that time?
Well, in the last year, I played a lot of tournaments. I did play my first few tournaments abroad in France. I played the Cannes tournament, which is around like February, March every year. And I just felt like doing these little chess journeys. So in the summer, I went to France again and played 3 tournaments in 1 month, which was equally exciting and tiring. So
yeah.
So I did play a lot of over the board tournaments despite having school, but I'm trying to manage both.
Yeah, that's difficult to juggle for sure. So you're definitely playing a good amount of OTB classical in that time. How did you approach studying over the past year or so? Did you have a regular regimen, or were you more relaxed about it?
When it comes to studying chess, I am lazy. I am very lazy. I am the person who would rather spam bullet and blitz games than to sit down and look at puzzles, which I know I should do that. But to me, playing is way more enjoyable than studying. So I tried a few times to sit down every day and study an hour of chess, let's say. But I don't know about you if you do that, but it's so difficult.
Well, yeah, I mean, there's a couple of ways it can be difficult, I guess. One is just like the challenge of what you're studying. But the other for me is energy, or, you know, just like after you've done a day of work or studying in your case, you know, just having the energy for it later in the evening is like the most difficult part about it to me. So I'm always excited to study chess, but getting the energy to do it for a long period of time, like an hour or more, is much more challenging. Yeah. Yeah. That's pretty encouraging, though, to hear that you can make the progress that you made on roughly an hour a day or so. I mean, that's not, you know, like that's a doable amount.
Well, yeah, of course, sometimes I skip a few weeks, you know, you know how it goes. But yeah. I'm trying to at least play a few games every day, so I do see a chessboard at least.
Yeah. And you worked with a coach in that time as well?
Yes, not like regularly, so we didn't have scheduled classes, but when we talked about let's say introducing a new opening, we of course had to have like a call or just like sit down and so I could be familiarized with the concept in the opening. But most of the work came from like having to do puzzles on my own, and then, you know, just kind of like sending it like how I did today, etc. So it was it's still a work in progress. So we don't really have scheduled classes. It's just whenever like I feel like I need it, or whenever I feel like I am not comfortable with one of the openings, or if I'm completely lost in some positions all the time, then that's when I need coaching a lot.
I see. Was there anything that you discovered over the past 15 months that didn't help you improve, or didn't help you improve as much as maybe you had hoped?
I think for me, sitting down and reading a book is just not the way how I can study chess. For me, it has to be more interactive. So, as I mentioned already, playing games with the openings that I need to study, let's say, or doing puzzle rush, doing puzzles, or doing chessable courses, because those are more interactive, and I don't know, that's just how I can study chess, even though I know a lot of people prefer studying from a book. So, like, I'm not sure what your study method is, but I feel like for me, it's more like it needs to be more interactive.
Yeah, I can relate to that. I mean, I understand, you know, it's definitely has a more dynamic component to it if it is interactive in the ways you talked about, like a chessable course or puzzles online. I think for that, like on tactics in particular, I feel that. I know that there's advantages to working on tactics from an actual physical book. But yeah, I just kind of like the interactivity of doing it online. So I can definitely relate to that. Yeah. Another question I have for you is related to how you practice with games outside of tournaments. So you're going to these classical tournaments pretty regularly, it sounds like, lately. So do you do classical online games as part of your preparation, or what is your playing games preparation look like?
I tried playing classical games online, but I had to realize it's just not the same feeling. So in the past year or so, I tried to play Rapid games and then look at my games afterwards. I feel like Rapid is the perfect time control to study online chess with, because you can still think of your moves, but it also doesn't take a whole day, you know?
Right, exactly. That's a good point. So yeah, I want to talk a little bit about your chess goals that you have for yourself. Let's start with your rating goal, because I think that kind of informs everything else. You mentioned it already a little bit, but maybe we can just state it flat out here. What rating goals do you have for yourself?
So earlier I always had the 2000 line, but now that I gained some rating, my first bigger goal is 2100. And with that, the WFM title. And after that, you know, I'm just gonna see how difficult it was for me to reach 2100. But if I ever do, I would love to get around 2300. And yeah, maybe even above that. But of course, I'm keeping it realistic for now, and I will just go with the 2100.
Sure. And 2300, I think, along with norms, gives you the WGM title, right?
I believe so. Yeah.
Yeah. So let's say the goal is 2100. So you push it up a little bit, because you're already pretty close to 2000 as is, which is about 200 points above where you are currently. Exactly. So what do you think you need to work on to get to that level? What do you think bridges the gap for you?
Many people don't know, but you need to work on your stamina when it comes to classical tournaments. Whenever I sit down and, you know, there is a double round day, it's just everyone is like pretty much dead tired in the end of the day. And I'm the same, but even like after one round, I could sleep a whole day. So I feel like I do need to work on my stamina with doing sport. Of course, I do need to work on my endgame skills, because I am not a fan of endgames, and so I always try to avoid playing them or studying them even. So I definitely need to finally sit down and start learning endgames. So these will be my first few steps, I think.
Gotcha. Has your coach encouraged you to spend more time working on endgames?
Oh, yeah. He knows. He knows that it's my weakness.
I see. Yeah, it's a little tougher with endgames, right? Because it doesn't always decide every game, you know? So This feels like at least half the time you can get away with not being particularly good at it, you know?
Exactly. I mean, you know, I think the most common endgames are like either pawn endgames or rook and pawn endgames. And okay, like pawn end games, if you're like down a pawn, it's pretty much over. And when it comes to rook end games, there's just so many special rules and everything. And it's most of them are just draw. Like there's this saying, you know, like rook end games are just all draws. And so, you know, in my brain, like I don't need to study them. Like I barely have them. But when I have them, it's such a painful loss, usually.
Yeah. Speaking of your coach, you're regularly working with a coach right now. What have you found to be most helpful about working with a coach?
I feel like the fact that someone is working on helping you just makes you feel like you do want to do the work, because otherwise it's just kind of mean that you made them work for you, you know? So it makes you feel guilty, like, oh, I mean, the coach did tell me to look at end games, and I didn't. But he spent the time to look at your games and then tell you that you do need to work on end games, and maybe they even suggest you courses or books, and then you're just like, okay, we'll do, and then never. So I think working with a coach, of course, like they can teach you a lot, but it also pushes you as you feel like you don't want to disappoint them, you don't want to have this guilt of not doing that they recommended you. I'm not sure if that makes sense.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Well, I've had I have some years of experience working with a coach myself, so I understand. And two coaches that I've spent the most time working with, they typically would have sessions with me where like the heart of our sessions would be reviewing at least one classical game that I played. So I knew I always had to bring at least one classical game to our session. And if I didn't, I knew I would be kind of gutting the session, in the sense that there would be nothing, you know, significant like that for us to talk about. And So I definitely can understand. You don't want to disappoint them and kind of harm the work that we're trying to do together, you know?
Yes, definitely. It's many factors,
right,
when it comes to like working with a coach, but of course it benefits you if you do put the work behind it. So
you just gotta absolutely
do it, I guess.
Right. Yeah. It's a positive form of some pressure, like it, you know, positive pressure, I guess you could say, to help keep you moving along with the process. Yeah. So we've kind of, you know, we've talked a lot about your chess journey and like what your chess goals are and things like that. But I feel like to some degree, as much as we've talked about how much time you spend on chess and all the different parts of your own chess improvement process, there's still a little bit understating how much chess is a part of your life, because there's other areas that in your life that you spend time with chess as well. One is doing some work with chess.com, moderating events. And another is a Twitch channel that you have, a chess Twitch channel, that I know you spend, you know, some time with. So there's these other areas of your life that you're working on with chess as well, along with your own just playing, studying journey. So when you put all that together, I can't help but wonder, if you did earn the WFM title or even beyond, and I'm talking about after you graduate, would you consider pursuing some career options in chess at that point?
It's difficult to decide this, because you're always like, oh, will this like work out if I want to be professional in chess? I will definitely try it if I reach 2100. You know, I will always have my degree, kind of. Once I earn it, you know, I can't lose it.
Right.
So, you know, maybe like I can try it out for like a year or two, how it all goes out. And if, you know, if it doesn't really work, then I can always just go back to what I studied, because I still enjoy that as well. So, you know, it's difficult to say that I want to drop engineering.
Right.
Or if I want to drop chess. I just feel like both are part of my life. And so, you know.
Yeah, I can imagine it would be hard to to let go of either one in any kind of big way. So that totally makes sense. I'm very chess biased though. So I kind of hopeful that it's at least a, you know, like an option for you on the table there as time goes on. And of course I'm cheering you on for earning that WFM title. Yeah. So yeah, I just want to talk a little bit about your Twitch channel. You already have thousands of followers, which is awesome. If you could give a little summary of your Twitch channel, like what kind of content do you stream, that sort of thing.
I would love to. So I started streaming, yes, as I mentioned, in 2021, and what I mainly or almost only stream is chess. I usually play with my viewers, but I don't mind hosting some little tournaments, occasionally doing commentary or puzzles. Or what my viewers love to see is Guess the Elo, which is it's really fun for them. For me, it's like there are 9 games usually, or like 10, and I get 1 or 2 correctly usually. And so, you know, they're laughing at me, and I'm just like, it's not my fault that you guys sent me troll games. So this is kind of what I do on my channel. Occasionally, I do maybe some karaoke, like in the end of the stream when my viewers want it. Although they want it less and less, I don't know why. So yeah, I also love to just talk about some topics that my viewers come up with. So I really don't mind engaging with my chat, because after all, we are all just a bunch of people hanging out together on the internet, even if I'm the only one who speaks loud. but I love to talk about current like chess dramas, you know, there's a lot of them anyways, so there's a lot right. there's a lot of resources for that. And I don't know, I just love building this little community, because there have been people since day one who are still watching, and it just kind of feels like we all know each other, and I already met some of them. So it's just really wholesome as an experience. Like, I don't know if you ever streamed yourself. I am not entirely familiar with that. I know that you do this podcast. I've seen you around for a while.
Right. Right.
But Twitch is really fun and stressful, but I feel like it's more fun.
Yeah. Well, all the stuff you talked about sounds really fun. I love that you do Guess the Elo. I'm only familiar with, I've only seen Levy do that so far. But I always enjoy it when he does it. But at the same time, it seems really challenging to do yourself. I can't even imagine. I would be terrible at it. So the fact that you, the fact that you do it is really cool.
I mean, I am terrible at it too. It's just.
But you mentioned also that you do commentary on your channel sometimes. And I noticed most recently you did commentary for Lula Robbs, someone I'm very familiar with, both because I've seen her on all of her stuff on Twitter, but also she was a guest early on my podcast. So I'm familiar with her. That's really cool that you did that for her, for, you know, one of her OTB tournaments. Have you done other commentary for people like that as well? Or was she the first one?
I think I did commentary maybe once before. It was actually for Dina Belenkaya.
Oh, nice.
I'm not even sure when that was, like a year ago, perhaps. It was for one of her OTB tournaments. And I think that's about it. Although I'm not sure. It's for me, for at this very moment, it's a bit difficult to recall it, but yes, I did. I commented it 2 rounds, like a few weeks ago, for Lula.
Do you foresee doing more commentary like that? How did you enjoy the experience of it?
I love it. It's fun because I can share my ideas, and it's also really fun because, you know, I have my own thoughts when I play the game, and you know, only those show. And when I'm commentating someone else's game, they just have such a different thought process than me. And so that's fascinating to see to me. And it's such an enjoyable challenge that you need to also put on these different glasses and look at the position differently, but at the same time also share your opinion about it and your ideas about it, and then discuss other people's ideas. So it's challenging, but it's so refreshing.
Yeah, it seems really cool. I mean, I feel like you are at a level where you're qualified to do that at 1900 FIDE. I'm still quite a ways away from being at that skill level. So I can't imagine myself doing it. I don't feel like I would have much to contribute.
Believe me, I did not see myself doing this ever in my life. So I think anyone can do it, really. Even if someone is like on a lower level, I feel like it can still be so enjoyable, because it's also a learning process for the commentator, but people can see your perspective as well. So I think it's completely okay if you do it on almost any levels, I feel like.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's a good point. Maybe I underestimate what I could contribute.
Definitely.
We'll see. Who knows whether I ever do that. I don't. You asked about me doing streaming. I haven't ever started a Twitch channel. I've been a guest on other Twitch channels and streams, so I've done it in that sense, but I haven't launched one myself. So maybe one day. But I'm always amenable to being on other people's streams, so that for now I find that fun and enjoyable and enough. But we'll see. Who knows. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I mean, you do this podcast and everything, so it's already a big job to prepare your questions, collect your ideas, and then just have a talk that people will enjoy. I feel like that's really difficult, and maintaining a Twitch channel at the same time would be like so much. But
yes,
you know, if you ever feel like doing it, I would love to see that.
Thank you. Well, I appreciate that. Yeah, I mean, that is, you correctly identified it. That's the number one factor thing, you know, kind of stopping me from doing it, is just how much work it would be to do both, right? Yeah, exactly. But yeah, it definitely has appealed to me though, nonetheless. Okay, so I want to just kind of finish our interview now by diving into a segment of some more fun, relaxed questions. I have a couple of here that are new, and we'll see how those work out. New in the sense that I haven't asked a guest yet a couple of questions. Yeah, so you get to potentially do a few new ones. So, who is your favorite player of all time?
I feel like it's such a basic answer for a lot of people, but my favorite player is Polgár Judit. I mean, Judit Polgár, sorry. It's a Hungarian name order, but so I would say Judit Polgár. And I love her story. I love what she's doing. And so I love her both as a player and as a person. So that would be my answer for sure.
Yeah, that's a fantastic choice. If you could play a great player of the past who is no longer alive, who would it be?
For me, I think that would be either Tal or Fischer.
Nice.
Both are nice. Like, you know, such huge players, and I would just love to see like how they are anyways, like as a person when we play, and how long would it take for them to destroy me, you know? Like
right. Two excellent choices. I love it. If you could play any of the top players in the world right now, who would it be?
My answer would definitely be Magnus Carlsen. So
yes, you know. Yes.
I know it's basic, but I can't refuse, you know, like if I could, I would.
Yeah, I don't blame you. It would be quite the amazing experience for sure. Definitely one you could you'd be able to brag about like forever.
Oh, I would.
yeah, definitely. So if you could hang out with any current chess celebrity for an evening, who would it be?
Chess celebrity, interesting. I think it would be Alexandra Botez, perhaps.
Nice.
Because I feel like she's so nice, and I would just love to like have a chat with her. So yeah, I would choose Alexandra.
Yeah, definitely. Have you met any chess celebrities?
I was lucky to be able to attend to TwitchCon last summer. So, I mean, TwitchCon Europe, so it was in Paris, France. And there I met such huge people like Maurice Ashley, Eric Hansen, Nemo, just to mention a few. But I met, yeah. I met so many amazing people like Anna Maya, Hannah Says. I won't be able to list everyone, but just it was so many amazing people. And of course, I have to mention my favorite player, Judith Poigard. I actually met her twice in my life. So
wow,
yeah, I think this is pretty much the list. I probably missed a few people, but I am pretty proud of this list for now.
That's an incredible list that you have. you might win the award for any of like already of just. For the future, I haven't asked other adult improvers this question, but I think you've already won. That's amazing. Now getting into the game itself, some questions on the game itself. What's your favorite way to study or work on your chess?
Well, as I have already mentioned, I feel like for me, it's playing a lot. So online as well as when I can over the board. But doing like chessable courses or puzzles. I think these would be my favorite ways of studying the game.
Excellent. Do you have a chess vice? And when I say chess vice, it's kind of like a my own expression, I guess. You know, there's a lot of things in chess that people say, oh, I shouldn't do so much of this. It's not great for me. Could be bullet, maybe watching too many YouTube videos. Anything like that where you're like something you feel you need to kind of limit a bit.
Okay, that's a good one. I am sometimes addicted to playing bullet. It's so bad, I feel like. Once I reached 2300 bullet on chess.com, and then like after maintaining this rating, I just sat down one evening and I probably lost 300 ELO and went back to 2000. So yes, that bullet is painful, but so enjoyable and addictive. So that would definitely be my chess wise.
So I know we talked about openings already, so this will probably be quick and maybe even a little bit of a repeat, and that's fine. But what's your favorite opening as white?
Favorite opening is white. I always open with e4, and then for like c5 I do a Mora gambit, and against French I just love the wing gambit.
Nice. What's your favorite opening as black?
I am a c5 player on e4, and I kind of like to do like this accelerated dragon. But against like d4, as I already mentioned, my all-time favorite, the Budapest. So yeah.
Yes, yes. If a chess genie existed and could grant you any one chess wish, what would you wish for?
I don't want to be like extremely basic with saying that I would be like the world chess champion. I kind of feel like I would ask for that still.
That's fine. Is that your answer?
Yeah, I would say that. I mean, who wouldn't want that?
Yeah, that's great. You're the first one, though, who went for it. And I think that's probably being the most honest in a way. Like, who wouldn't want to be world chess champion?
Exactly.
That sounds amazing. Yeah. So I appreciate you just going straight for the top on that.
I would love that. I would enjoy it for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a great answer. All right. So yeah, those were all my questions for that. I really enjoyed chatting with you. I'm glad we got a chance to connect here and talk at length. And know, like with several of my guests, I've had interactions just a little bit on Twitter, but never had a longer extended live conversation like this. So I'm happy that we got a chance to do it. And your journey is amazing. You've done so many great things already. And yeah, I'm excited to see where you continue to go with chess. And thank you for spending time on the show.
Well, it was absolutely my pleasure. It's been great to be here and talk with you about chess. And thank you for doing this podcast. Really, I feel like it's so good that you bring on so many different people from professional chess players like Andrash to so many adult improvers, And I feel like it's so good to see all levels of chess, regardless of what our ratings are.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate that. Yeah, definitely my goal to bring on people of all levels. So thank you so much for being on the show. And I'm looking forward to all that you do with chess in the future.
Well, thank you, and hope to see you around.
Thanks for listening. This has been a production of my business, Adult Chess Academy. And that has a website with the same name if you want to look for it. You can also find me being way too active on Twitter by searching my username, Lona_chess. See you next week.